It's barely June, and many of the most anticipated summer movies have already hit theaters, including an installment in one of the longest-running superhero series and a new buddy film, each adopting a retro look. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Today we take a second look at two of the tentpole summer films, one a new installment in the long-running X-Men franchise, X-Men Apocalypse, the other an R-rated crime-solving buddy film with franchise dreams of its own called The Nice Guys. For thoughts on these two films, I'm joined by frequent On Film contributor Gene Creel. Good morning, Gene.
Morning. Morning.
You've been back in theaters sitting in the dark. What have you been watching? Let's start off with The Nice Guys.
All right. The Nice Guys are two mostly inept and unsuccessful private detectives working in L.A. in the late 70s. Russell Crowe is a physical enforcer, usually going after deadbeats. Ryan Gosling is more likely to be chasing missing persons. They finally team up when they discover that they're both looking for the same missing person. It has a very complicated plot involving the porn industry, dirty politics, corporate greed, sabotage by environmentally minded hippies, plus humor, violence, and plenty of 70s sleaze. The movie is written and directed by Shane Black, who gave us Iron Man 3, wrote the screenplay for Lethal Weapon, so he's certainly no stranger to the buddy genre and has a wonderful gift of gab. In fact, the dialogue between Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling is easily the best reason to see this film. Now, some critics have said that it's a satire of the 70s, and there is the cars, the clothes, the hair, the music. But I don't see it that way. Satire to me is a pure form. I prefer my satire either deadly serious, such as in Dr. Strangelove, or just simply played for laughs all the way through, like Monty Python and the Holy Grail. To me, this is simply a comedy rated R for profanity and violence.
And a lot of nudity.
And a lot of nudity.
Very 70s in that. So would you call this more of an homage? I mean, it certainly treads on, I could get images of a lot of 70s films in my head as I was watching this film.
Absolutely. I thought sort of Chinatown with jokes, you know. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of humor. And I did find myself laughing.
But it's not a comedy.
Well,
It's organic to the plot, let's say, and the characters in the plot.
True. True. And I think that's where some of my criticism lies. You need to tread lightly when you feature children or animals in film. And Ryan Gosling's relationship with his 13-year-old daughter, I found some of the scenes offensive. And it disappointed me because I don't think I offend easily. But there were just a couple of scenes that I felt were gratuitous and could easily have been deleted and would not have interfered with the integrity or continuity of the film.
You know, I think the film worked a little better for me. It is a very distinctive film. And you just mentioned one of, I think, the hallmarks of this film that makes it so good, which is the 13-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. That character, it's not someone we've seen in these buddy films before, the hard-bitten detective film. And this young actress, I think her name's Angerie Rice. Mm-hmm. She's a really fresh face, and without giving anything away, she's lost her mother. Ryan Gosling has lost his wife to a tragedy, and as the film goes on, she becomes a bigger and bigger part of what drives the plot, and she is acting not only as sort of mother in the household, but taking on the duties of the private eye's assistant, if you will.
Exactly.
And even becomes one of the solvers of the central mystery of the tale. And I think Ryan Gosling at the beginning of the film realizes that he walks through a cesspool of humanity as a private eye in L.A. in the 70s. And he's concerned about the world in which his daughter is growing up into. But she's, of course, seeing this world as well as a young adult and is curious and is beginning to navigate those things in her own way. And I think Shane Black does a beautiful job of showing that, maybe at times a bit too much, of the situations he puts her in. But it's an interesting relationship in
Absolutely.
The film.
Absolutely. And I think it's a very important relationship because it's not only what I thought was almost his criminal bordering on neglect of her, but that's tempered by what becomes obviously Russell Crowe's very compassionate and empathetic treatment of her. He recognizes in her that she's hurting as much as the dad, and he sort of steps in and takes the role, I think, that Gosling should be playing as her father.
Right.
She is very wise. She's very perceptive and intuitive, and a beautiful young girl. I know we'll see a lot more of her. And I do like the children that we've seen in movies like St. Vincent or more recently Demolition.
Mm-hmm.
That young child, that Judah Lewis, who played the boy in Demolition, amazing.
You also have to love a film in which the final chase scene is all the characters in the film running after a rolling can of film.
Right.
It's fallen off the projector and out a window and down the street, and everyone's after this can of film, and we won't give anything else away. But one of the things I think that I was responding so well to, thinking a day after about this film, is it's original. And I don't mean that in the sense of the story. You know, most stories are original to a certain degree, but this story does not exist in another form. It's not coming from a comic book or a popular franchise that already exists. It doesn't have merchandising tied in with it. It's a cohesive, self-contained film that in this day and age seems rather old-fashioned. It's the way we used to make films, which we'd go in completely unassuming what we're about to see and just let the story play out. And I found myself not able to anticipate what came next. And it was delightful to actually get to sit and see a film but like that. But it's not for everyone. As you mentioned, it's rated R, so tread lightly.
Tread lightly.
The Nice Guys is set in 1977. Another film that looks backwards and is set around the same era is the new X-Men series, which launched in 2000, which I guess by today's standards of reboots and retreads makes it the oldest contemporary superhero franchise running, and it's starting to show its age. The sixth film, X-Men Apocalypse, winds back the clock to 1983 with a host of young actors playing the teenage or early 20-something versions of a number of our favorite mutant characters. These X-Kids are mostly still in a boarding school learning about their unique powers when the world is threatened again, and they're forced to grow up fast and get fitted for spandex. For a film titled Apocalypse, Gene, I really thought there was almost no revelations here. It felt like I'd seen all of these scenes before and these moments in so many myriad other superhero films. We get Oscar Isaac playing the villain Apocalypse in blue skin and lots of prosthetics. He's an apparently ageless super mutant who walked the Earth the last time in 3600 BC as a pharaoh. He's reanimated and with godlike powers and an overconfidence to match. Isaac, I thought, was pretty underwhelming, actually. It's a misstep in his rise to stardom. And even in his stature, he's barely matching eye levels with Sophie Turner, who most people will know as the young actress who makes her jump to the big screen from playing Sansa Stark on the Game of Thrones franchise. But like most superhero films, X-Men Apocalypse vacuums many of the most gifted screen actors of our age into its maelstrom. It includes Jennifer Lawrence, Michael Fassbender, and James McElroy returning from the last two films. And the yeoman director, Bryan Singer, is back from X-Men 1, 2, and 5. So it's disappointing that the veterans here can't lead the new, younger crop of performers to new heights. This is one of those bloated superhero films, I think, you know, with so many characters, so many locales, 2.5 hours. It's a standard runtime, it seems now, 2.5 to 2:45 runtime for these kinds of films. But it's peculiar, I thought, and I'm curious what you think, that it spends its first hour and a half largely introducing characters and conflicts and in no real rush and mostly using exposition instead of explosions, which I'm normally for more talking and less explosions. But for me, by the time we actually get around to the final reel and the real conflict, I'm just weary from all the talking and explaining that's going on in this film.
I have to admit, I came to this film as a non-fan, and by that I mean I'm not familiar with the series. And so my highest expectation would be that I wouldn't be too confused, too lost. And I discovered that, no, I sort of recognized that bored-looking Jennifer Lawrence once she became blue. Hmm. And I did recognize Hugh Jackman. But it did seem to be mostly an introduction of many new mutants for future films. And through some flashbacks and some narrative, I was sort of able to follow, but there really wasn't much of a plot to follow. It just seemed to be we were going to have to deal with Oscar Isaac. And as you say, to me, that was the biggest disappointment. I thought, we're in big trouble. He seems to possess powers that were simply invincible. And so we spend 2.5 hours waiting for the denouement, which turns out to be very anticlimactic. But apparently that's what it's really all about, right? Leaving us wanting more.
Well, there's so many problems endemic to this film that are also endemic to the genre in general, is every film has to have a bigger, more powerful villain. But I think one of the cornerstones in the Marvel Universe is this is part of that comic book industrial economic complex that now is owned by Disney. And with all of these films in the pipeline, I think like too many of the recent superhero films, X-Men Apocalypse feels like its main objective is not to be a good film, but rather to be a preamble to the next 5 or 10 movies that are coming, many of which are already in the pipeline and pre-production and have opening dates scheduled and summers to come. So, you know, these films like X-Men Apocalypse and the others we've seen this summer, you know, they really are so busy making promises for the future that they forget to fulfill us in the present.
Right. As I said, it seemed to be mostly an introduction of all the new faces that we will see in the next two films.
I will say, too, that it has a shockingly dull visual effects, I mean, which are everywhere in this film, but they're just airless, dull. They're usually all the destruction is shot from afar, and we have no sense of the humanity that so far in these titles is what these superheroes are supposed to be protecting. So there's almost no actual human beings. It's mostly mutants talking about saving the world. But when it comes to saving that world, it's mostly crimes against property they're defending against.
Right.
So I think we both agree the best film of the summer just left El Paso, and it was only here for a week.
That's right. It's heartbreaking. A Bigger Splash, a new Italian film from Luca Guadagnino. We're struggling with his pronunciation, but it's a fascinating film set on an island featuring Tilda Swinton and Matthias Schoenaerts as a very much in love couple who are recuperating. She's recuperating as a rock star who's had throat surgery. And their idyllic isolation is totally disrupted by the arrival of her former lover and producer of her music, along with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it sets the stage for what plays out to be an amazing erotic thriller, drama, all of the above.
And we both think that this is a masterpiece and was hoping it would have a second week run so we could talk about it and send people to the theaters to support it. But it's already gone, so hopefully it will be back soon on DVD or Blu-ray. I don't know about you, but it reminded me so much of Patricia Highsmith's novels and work, particularly The Talented Mr. Ripley. I recalled the 1960 film, which is available streaming right now, Purple Noon by René Clément, starring Alain Delon. It's a French interpretation of The Talented Mr. Ripley, so people can go check that out, as well as the original film this was based on, The Swimming Pool from 1969. So, Gene, always great to talk to you, talk films with you. I'm sure we'll be watching lots more in the coming weeks, but we still have a few big ones ahead.
So yes, we do.
Something to entice us back to the theaters.
I hope so. Thank you, Chuck.
We've been discussing the retro-styled Private Eye film The Nice Guys and Marvel Studios' latest superhero film X-Men Apocalypse. Both films are playing in local theaters now. A final program note, my own film series, The Film Salon, begins a new series this evening at 7:30 p.m. with a screening of the 1940 classic The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart and Mary Astor. The Film Salon meets at Trinity First United Methodist Church, located at 801 North Mesa, and all screenings are free of charge. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.